mother of 21 years, and now that my kids are almost entirely grown up, I am a full-time private tutor. So I teach private math lessons over Zoom and classical math. I teach Euclid, if you're familiar with that. If you're not, come to my 2 o'clock class tomorrow and find out why we study ancient Greek geometry. And I also tutor classics for kids ages 8 to 14. And I also own a private tutoring company with my daughters where we train and hire private tutors to mentor one-on-one in the classics. So that's what I do. I am from Utah originally, but all my kids were born and raised in Burley, Idaho, so that's why I get to be a part of this Idaho thing. Yeah. So, and I do live in Utah now. Okay, so I'm assuming you all are here because you have someone dear to you with ADHD. Raise your hand if that's the case. Or yourself. We should be dear to ourselves. Yeah. I also have ADHD, so I can relate. I discovered that I had it when I was learning about it as vigorously as I could to try to help my son, who I was pretty sure had it. And the more I read, the more I discovered myself. Because it's a little different in adults than children, and it's a little different in women than men. And so it took quite a bit of reading, and I would find myself just going down rabbit holes online because I wasn't just learning about my son anymore. I was like, oh, this explains all my quirks, right? And nobody caught on that I had ADHD as a kid because my hyperfocus, if you're familiar with the ADHD hyperfocus, my hyperfocus was learning. And usually ADHD is discovered in school because you won't do your schoolwork. But I would like sit it because, you know, I didn't have classical education growing up. I didn't have foreign languages to learn at a young age, and I didn't have all these wonderful ideas to fill my mind with, so I'd sit up at night teaching myself to talk backwards and like count backwards by sevens and all these weird brainy things because I had a very active mind. That was my hyperfocus. So anyway, what I want to talk about today is not so much what ADHD is, but how to deal with it. There's plenty of literature experts and doctors who will talk to you about what ADHD is. But I want to talk to you about how to help your children navigate a great education, a world-class education, even if they have ADHD, because that's what I have experience in. So, the first thing that I want to mention is if you're going to start facing it really proactively, if you want to start any of the things that I'm going to suggest you implement, first you need to kind of take the temperature in the home. How's your relationship with your kids with ADHD? Sometimes those relationships get the most strained of all because if you're not fully aware of what's going on, you kind of think they're just naughty when they're little, right? And when they're big, or that they don't care to keep commitments, and that they're above all the rules, and they don't have to do anything unless they really, really want to. That's what it can feel like, right? Which is also basic human nature, right? But it's harder and more pronounced with ADHD. It's difficult for them to focus on things that they're not super, super excited about. So the first thing that I suggest that you do is if you find that your relationship is strained with this child, before starting the steps that I'm going to talk to you about, spend a month journaling every single night about the positive things that you see them doing. This is a magical formula that I read about maybe, I don't know, 7 years ago or something, and it changed my life. To take one of your children and write about them in your journal every night, anything positive. If they were completely rebellious that day, maybe there's one thing positive you can think of, or one thing you know about them they could have done, right? Write that down. Write anything that you can think of. And the more you write, the more things you will see the next day, and then the more you have to write. And this sets your mindset right. You can't come into this with a bunch of great steps and boxes to check, even though I think I've got a bunch of great steps to give you. You've got to also come in with a heart that is right toward your child. So do that first if it's gotten to that point. It's very common, by the way, so don't feel ashamed if you have this. It's very common to have very strained relationships with the kids with ADHD. Let's see. Okay, so that's my first word of caution. Whoops, everything just disappeared. Okay, next, second, get informed on everything you can about ADHD before you start trying to, like, very actively, proactively dealing with it. Go start Googling. Just Google it. Read. The authors you like, see if they have a podcast. I started doing this in the beginning. While you're doing laundry, while you're driving, while you're running errands, you know, cleaning your house, start just binging podcasts on the subject and find out who you like to listen to on it. See what's speaking to your heart on it, just so you can be more informed on what's going on in their mind. Because I would say it's got a really, it's got a bad name. ADHD, attention deficit, what I've found, it's not attention deficit. They actually have an extreme gift of, like, the ability to put their attention on something much deeper than the average human. And so that's why they're not paying attention to all this blah, blah, blah that they're hearing, that we think everyone else in the home is listening to me. Everyone else plays by the rules. Why can't they? It's like you got to pull them off of another planet before they're actually listening. And that's not attention deficit. That's, like, extreme attention gifted, right? And so just looking at it that way will be really helpful. Another thing you can do, my favorite expert that I have found in ADHD is Dr. Amen, and he's all over online. You can watch YouTube things all night long. If you have ADHD, you could watch YouTube all night long.
How do you spell that?
Thank you. That's how I spelled it, but I just wanted to double check. Okay. Yeah, he's really good, and he has a book called Healing ADHD. And what's really interesting about him, he's very holistic, so he does brain scans and looks at the brain, and then he suggests and prescribes things according to what he sees. So his book is full of examples and stories of how it's not just a one-size-fits-all cure. You might need to start nourishing your brain with certain nutrients. You might need to drink more water for your particular symptoms and what he's seeing in the mind. So it's a really great read, and it kind of opens your mind to really what's going on in the brain with ADHD and the different ways to deal with it. Okay, but I'm not going to talk about the cures. I'm going to talk about how to help them channel the gift that ADHD is, even with its challenges, into a great classical education. So the first thing you want to do, I guess this is the third. I keep saying the first. The next first thing you want to do is see it as a gift. Okay, so I don't just mean take my word for it and start trying to see it as a gift. You need to actually get to the point where you see it as a gift. And to do this, I have four books I suggest you read. And these are children's books that I have mentored kids in over the years. And it blows my mind how many of the world's geniuses, most certainly by my diagnosis, had ADHD. It's pretty obvious, especially not just having raised kids with ADHD and having it myself, but I've private tutored almost 100 students over the last 6 years, and I feel like I can spot them a mile away. Like, but the geniuses who have changed our world, so many of them have ADHD. So that's my diagnosis of them. But here are a few of them that I have so much admiration for. So from the Sowers series, if you want to order and read Johannes Kepler. Okay, and I'll tell you just a little bit about him. So he was a mathematician and scientist in the 1500s. And he was improving upon the work of Copernicus. And back then, where he lived in Germany, it was really taboo to even mention Copernicus, to side with Copernicus at all, because Copernicus's idea of planetary rotation went against what Aristotle said, and that was not what the Catholic Church was promoting at the time. And so this was a really big deal. And he had so much courage. He was careful where and when to speak out, but he, along with Galileo, who was his contemporary, who also, you know, was persecuted for speaking out. He improved upon it so much that he mapped out the theory and actually mapped out the rotation of the stars. And he got so far But he couldn't do the, he couldn't finish the math on exactly how the motion of the solar system worked, okay? But you notice in his book that he has this ability to hide away in an office and work with like unknown rigor on this calling that he had from God. And he feels so inspired all the time. He set out to be a preacher, and that's why he was in getting his classical education, right? And learning Latin and studying the classics and the Bible. And he kept feeling this pull, which made him feel guilty, kept feeling this pull toward math and astronomy. And he couldn't deny it. And life kept putting him there. God kept putting him in this position. And he kept thinking, oh, I got to stick to the scriptures, and I got to devote my life to the Lord. And what he figured out over the course of his life is this was his calling from the Lord. This was how he would respond to his call, would be to be the first person to finally accurately measure the stars and map out the night sky. So huge, huge progress in the world of science for us. And then when he dies, next comes Isaac Newton. And that's the next book I want you to read. And it's also in the Sower series. I love some of the books in the Sower series. But Isaac Newton picks up the work right where Kepler left off, okay? And Isaac Newton was known as a child to be a little bit useless, the neighbors would say. He's certainly not going to amount to much. It's too bad because his father was such a great, successful farmer, and his father before him, and we were hoping to see great things from little Isaac as he grew up. But what they found was, you know, they would send him out to watch the sheep, and all the sheep would get out because he was staring off, and they just thought he was kind of dumb. What he was doing was calculating the area of the field. And they sent him to school, and he didn't fit in very well. He was made fun of. He did not take to the kinds of lessons that school was offering. Does that sound familiar to any kids with ADHD? Yeah, he did not take well to them. He didn't think that he really liked school. And the people who were boarding him while he was at school, they were embarrassed to report to his mother the stuff he was spending his time on. It looked like he was playing and making little trinkets out of wood and string and metal and whatever he could get his hands on. But what he was doing was inventing and developing and discovering things, okay? And he had such a pronounced ability to get lost in his work. He nearly died in Cambridge when he was writing the Principia, which is known to this day as the greatest work of all time in mathematics and science. And he nearly died because he couldn't remember to eat or sleep. Okay, so this is pretty severe, right? But I know how this is. My son would stay up all night long creating the most beautiful guitar pieces, just genius musician, and then what's he going to do for his math class in the morning, you know? But so it's really good to be able to see this as a gift. If you don't see that side of it, it's this constant battle with your kids. You need to realize, like, they have something special to give the world. And you need that deeply rooted. That's why I say read the books. Don't just take this synopsis from me. But Isaac Newton, the poor little boy that wasn't going to amount to much, he finally cracked the code that all the scientists right before him were working on. He was able to do the math to solve the motion of the solar system. And that's the same motion that our speedometer in our car is immediately calculating as we speed up from 75 to 85. That's Isaac Newton. It's everywhere in our world. He is known, hands down, as the greatest mathematician and scientist who ever lived. And there he was, that little boy that wasn't going to amount to much. So, pretty touching. Then, if you want to read Galileo, Number the Stars, it's called. You'll get to see into the life of Galileo, equally gifted at secluding himself and hyper-focusing to no end. What's really cool about most of these, especially Isaac Newton and Kepler, is their unfailing devotion to God. They loved the Lord. Isaac Newton wrote more about the Bible than he ever did about math or science. And the courage they had in their life to stand up to evil. They did some very remarkable things that are captured in those little children biographies. Okay, then Louis Pasteur. Also from the Sower series. That Galileo one is not from the Sower series, but Louis Pasteur is. Louis Pasteur I don't know that he had ADHD, but he definitely had what people in our day would think is a disability. So he was known to process information so slowly. He couldn't ever keep up in school. He was extremely smart. He ended up discovering and becoming the father of microbiology, right? But if he had taken standardized tests in our day, he would have been thought of as slow and maybe not the type of person you would put on the path of education, maybe find him a trade or something. That's what you would think. So I will mention these great heroes because they changed our world, and it's my experience raising kids with ADHD that they are extremely gifted. And we walk a fine line as their parents. We don't want to squish them with rigid one-size-fits-all education. And I'm preaching to the choir because you wouldn't be here if you were into rigid one-size-fits-all education. We also need to be very careful not to let them off the hook of education, because that's also not serving them. What would have happened to Isaac Newton when school wasn't working out for him if they had said, okay, just go be on the farm? He wouldn't have had what he needed to fulfill his mission in life. What would have happened to Louis Pasteur if they had said, you know what, he's just so slow. He wasn't cut out for school. And you know, in the public school system, everybody does school. As homeschoolers, we have a lot of freedom to cater our kids' experience to what we feel they most need. Careful that we don't abandon our task. We have a more difficult task with these kids, but it's my experience, not just as a mother, but as a private tutor, that these kids can get great education. And in a minute, you're going to see what it all comes down to. I feel like there are a couple of factors that kind of make or break their opportunity for success. Okay, now, let's see. Fourth, we need to help them see it as a gift, okay? And I don't want you to address that up front with them. I want you to let them discover it, because then they'll believe it. Kids don't love being lectured to and told what they are and who they are and how they need to live, right? If you'll assign them those books or read them to the family at night, let them just pick up on this. And when the time is right, if you feel so inspired and it's just the right moment, you want to talk all about this, fine. But I wouldn't go about it intentionally with that as your main plan, like I'm going to sit and help you see your gift. I would let them discover it, because it's pretty cool. You can talk about the grades as you're reading them. You can point out that so-and-so thought he just couldn't pay attention in school, but come to find out, the greatest genius who ever walked the earth. Like, you can point those things out, but just don't patch it all up tight in a bow and tell them what to think about themselves. It's not as effective. Okay, now, let's see. In fact, I would say that about this whole class. There are a few youth in here. No, you're an adult. Yeah, maybe there aren't any youth in here. I'd say this about this whole class. It's not kid and teen approved, because it's not right for them to hear your whole game plan. This is strictly adult content. Okay, so back to helping them see it as a gift. Assign them those books, but not with a loaded agenda. You don't need to make sure they got the point every single day. Just let it happen naturally. Okay, next, this is the harder part. Set them up for success by helping them establish some very strong study habits. Now, if you have a kid with ADHD, right now you're thinking, that's an oxymoron. Kids with ADHD don't establish strong study habits. Right, they're often distracted, they want to go move their bodies instead of focus. But I can tell you from experience that they can, and they must, if they're going to be able to channel their genius, that God-given genius, into blessing mankind. They've got to get great education. Okay, so this is really, really important. And it doesn't have to be intimidating. Establishing study habits is a very subtle thing you start, and it grows. If you do it well, it will grow over time. If you hit it too hard, overwhelming everyone, upset the cart, they're going to create big mental blocks and negative association with school. If they already have, send them out to pasture and journal for a month about their good points, and then come back and try this again, okay? Okay, so let's see. Okay, so here's how you can help them establish these study habits. And everything I'm about to say needs to be done with great care. Okay, so if you're like the stay-at-home mom that's homeschooling, and you want to do some of this in your home after you hear this, to pull it off, you got to be on your toes. You need to get good sleep. You need to have good nutrition. You need to cut some things out of your life, several things that would clutter up your mind and make you just kind of scatterbrained yourself, because it's going to take some focus and some endurance. It's not an easy thing to help a kid with ADHD get over the first hump of establishing study habits. It's a really big task, but it can be done. I've done it myself with success, and I've seen parents do it. I've coached a lot of parents through this. So I'll tell you what you can do. Let's see. Oh, because when you're scatterbrained, you're not going to get inspiration from God as easily, and you need to. You need to be there for your kid. You need to do your best scenario several times of the day. We all can mess up, right? That's okay. There's room for error. We don't want to be policing and flying off the handle and constantly impatient, or the efforts we're making are not really going to take. So you want to just really set yourself up for success. Okay. Okay, and if you don't, I feel like you fall into the foremost ineffective parenting tactics. And to me, those are reminding, nagging, shaming, and policing. Those seem to be the default MO for parents who haven't, like, intentionally set their mind to address this as their main goal, calling upon the Lord for inspiration and giving it all they've got. If they're just going to, like, do it as their side thing while they run two businesses and go get your homework done, and that it's not going to happen. You got to give it all you've got. Okay, so Charlotte Mason taught a principle. I teach parent courses on classical education. They're all based on the teachings of Charlotte Mason, so I like to quote her all the time. But she taught a principle called masterly inactivity. And this is really useful with kids with ADHD. It's something you're going to become a master of, but it's going to look very nonchalant, like very inactive. Like you're not actively supervising and making this thing happen for your child. It's going to appear as though you're just living life, okay? And that's why you need to be on your toes. You're not gonna be yelling commands at them. You're gonna be thinking and proactively making decisions that are gonna help them have success. So you're gonna appear a little inactive about it to your kid so they don't feel like you're hovering over them. But you want to be a master of it. So that's actually very intentional. Okay, so here are my steps of how I would help kids establish very strong study habits. Number one, don't start with studies. Start with chores, very simple chores. Now, just because your kid may know how to do chores, that doesn't mean they have really good habits with how they do the chores. So think about the things that would be important to you in the chores. Do you want them to run and do it half-heartedly and run off to play without showing you the floor they swept? Or do you want them to come back and report? Are you okay if they drag their vacuuming out all day long? Or do you want them to get done within a certain time frame? We're going to talk about why some of these things are important and actually help the child. But start making a little list of the details, because the magic is in the details. The details that they learn to follow and keep with exactness are going to train them to have that kind of precision in their education. You don't need to, like, put them on military time and have some giant work schedule. I just mean little tiny chores that they're already doing in the home. How can you teach them to clean those up and make them, help them be a little more precise, a little more accountable with those chores? Okay, so now underneath this step, we're going to do some steps. Okay, so this is how you get them into this study schedule. So number one, sit down and teach them. This one you will do proactively. Teach them that successful people have learned how to keep commitments. Okay, and it's an important part of growing up to learn to make and keep commitments, to follow a plan, to live by high standards of expectation for ourselves. Just teach them that. It's true. They'll probably feel it if you don't over lecture at other times, and if you've been doing your positive journaling at night, they'll probably feel the truth of that. Then teach them that the first step of this is to learn to follow a schedule. Because it's not the task that they'll keep their own commitments, like, oh, I really love to ride my bike, so I'm just going to keep that commitment. That's not hard. That's easy. That's following the path of least resistance and sort of being lazy, because it's just what they want to do. Learning to keep commitments, they need to learn to follow an agenda that was not their own, because they're a part of a family, and because service in a home is a God-given principle, okay? So out of duty, they need to learn to do things that they didn't think of. Now, when you first tell them that the first step is to learn to follow a schedule, they're probably going to get quite resistant. So you need to beat them to it. You need to jump ahead and let them know that taking on too much or too hefty of a schedule will likely overwhelm them, and that we should be gentle at first and take on just a little at a time, make sure to take good care of ourselves and have plenty of free time. That's going to feel really good to them. But it's also a true principle when you start something out. You don't want to tip yourself over. We'd rather see really high quality on one or two little chores and then a whole day of free time than, like, here's this big giant list of stuff you have to accomplish every day and you're going to fail, right? So that's the whole principle here. Start really small and expect a very high standard in how they do it. So when you let them know that it's very important to start small and not take on too much, that's going to feel good to them. They're going to be like, okay, she gets me, right? My parents get me. They're not going to be as scared. They'll build a little bit of trust. Now, after that, you want to find out the things that they most want to spend their time doing. What would you do if I didn't have chores and studies for you? What are your favorite things to do? Let's put those on a list. That's also going to feel good to them. That's very validating. So put those on a list. They'll see that it's important to you. You can validate those. You can ask questions. You can get excited about their list. Then write down the few basics that you expect them to do each morning. Just say, it's important to us that everybody groom themselves beautifully each morning, make their bed. Like, go through the list. My little kids had this rhyme, bed, floors, closets, drawers. And I think everybody, every mom at least, has little thingies they come up with to get their kids in a little routine. So think up your best one of those, give them one of those, okay? And then here's the key. Put it on a schedule, not just something on your phone. Like, print a blown-up spreadsheet with cells and put 6, 7, 8, 9 o'clock, whatever time they wake up. Put all the hours of the day, or you can do it by the half hour. And put those on so they can see what a day is made of. This, especially little kids, this is very helpful to them. When they're like, oh my gosh, that's all my chores take? The rest is free time? It's very motivating. That means if I do my room and bed and help clean up breakfast, I'm free. I mean, most kids don't have just that in the day, right? They usually have piano lessons and other chores, and they usually have studies. But you can backtrack a little and kind of wipe their schedule clean just for a couple of months in order to establish a new relationship, in order to help them establish a new relationship with keeping commitments. If they already look at it as trash, they're not going to come with a lot of excitement to it. So I think what you lose in backing out of all the things on their list, you actually gain. You're going to invest and gain years of productivity from them. Okay, so let them see the time slots. This gives them a vision of the day and kind of how it lays out. Then walk them through hypothetically what it needs to look like. You can go up to their room. You can show them, hey, tonight let's de-junk everything so that when you do your beds, floors, closets, drawers, it'll only take 3 minutes, right? If it's all clean, it's easier. That's huge. You don't want to give them a chore that involves some junk pile you should have de-junked last Saturday. You want to set them up for success with something that's already clean and organized. Just need to put their sock in the right spot and their dirty socks in the hamper, right? Just make it simple. Okay, so walk them through that. Help them visualize it all. Make sure that they understand hypothetically what it should look like, and make sure that they think it's going to fit into the time slot. I usually say something like this. Since you usually get ready and do your room and stuff, let's say this is a little boy, you know, doesn't have to braid or curl his hair. Like, since you usually get ready and clean everything in maybe 15 or 20 minutes, let's give you 30 minutes. Then you've got a good buffer, and you don't have to feel like you're under pressure, right? And that also builds trust. They feel really good. They might get a little extra free time. They might get ahead on something. And you can tighten and tune this up later. But do you see how I'm setting them up for success by making it really easy? But I'm expecting in return precision. And they report, and they come humbly ask me to check it, and they take the correction. So walk them through those expectations, because that's the important part. It's not that they just did their room. Anyone can do that. Can they notice the time, get right on it, avoid distraction? Okay, that's what you want them to be able to do. Okay, and not for too much of the day. They need to go be free and let their brain rest from all that focus. Okay. Now, okay, if you just ask them to finish it before they go play, in my experience, children might drag it out all day. So it's really important to train them in habits of attention. I remember doing this with my son. He was 5 years old, and his only jobs were his little personals in the morning, whatever he could do himself, brush your teeth, make your bed, you know, whatever, bed, floors, closets, drawers. And then he was going to start doing dishes with us soon. And so I wanted to train him a little on the quality of this. I learned habit formation from Charlotte Mason, and I teach courses on it if you want more in depth than I have time for it in this class. But I took him aside in the morning, and I said, while I'm making breakfast, this is your little pile of rags I want you to fold every morning. And then you can go play while you wait, you know, for breakfast to start. And it was 5 racks. I knew that was no big deal. But it's not about the racks. It's about him being able to focus on a certain standard for a period of time. So what I told him is, I know you can fold rags, but I want you to be careful and fold them like this. And I showed him just how they should look. And I said, look how pretty they look when they're lined up with the fold on the same side. That makes the drawer look nice. Do you think you can do that? Yeah. And I said, I know you can, but the trickiest part is when your brother comes running through with a bouncy ball, it's going to be distracting. You might want to go play with him. What could you say to your brother that would be nice and friendly and not rude, but you don't get sucked in, you actually finish? And so we practiced this, and the idea was he needs to fold all 5 and then he could go. If he got distracted in the middle, we had to unfold him and he had to try again. I made it friendly, like a little game. I know he's little, you can adapt this idea, you're not going to do this with a 15-year-old, but you get the idea. We're going to start small and we're going to expect quality. So then we added a few more racks, and then a few more, and after a while he could do 20, and after a while we upped the game. I said, okay, one of your brothers, I've put him up to this, he's going to come in the middle of this with something really fun, and you got to see if you can resist the temptation and stick to your task. So we'd play these little games, and it's not like we're trying to train perfectionism, okay? Charlotte Mason talked about training kids in a habit of perfection is actually a really beautiful thing. As humans, we love beauty. We love order, and we love to see things done right, because that's where success comes from, and that's where happiness comes from. But if we get sucked into toxic perfectionism, which you see in our day, people feeling negative about anything that didn't go perfectly, that's very different. A habit of perfection is more like learning to take joy in making things right, so we're positive about it. We don't say, no, that's wrong. We say, great job. And look what happens if I flip the rag this way. Isn't that beautiful? Just a little tweak in how you say things helps kids see that it's fun to do things right. It's not annoying and scary and shameful. So, okay, so that was how I taught my son that, okay? And we don't have time to go into all the different examples, but you can cater this to different ages. You can say to a 17-year-old, okay, it's important to us that we have some order in the home. These are the things that need to be done first. These things, I don't care what order, so you decide, but they need to be done before free time, and then free time, do whatever you want. And you can make these lists. What are your favorite free time things? What kind of things would you like to do? What order would you like to put these studies in? You know, you can cater this thing. If you've got a severe instance, wipe their slate clean and just start them with some morning chores. Let them go do what they want for the rest of the day. Okay. Okay, now, let's see. Okay, in my experience, hold on a second. I think I need to adjust this for time. Okay, here's why let me back up one more. Okay, in my experience, if we don't take the pains to invest in this first, and we just keep nagging or getting walked on or, you know, letting them get away with this stuff, we pretty soon get tempted to lower the standard. Like, maybe I shouldn't be expecting this of them because they're different. But in my experience, that's not, it doesn't help them. They actually are not happy and they don't thrive. They don't need to do as much vacuuming as their sibling that doesn't have the natural overwhelm of ADHD. You can assign them a smaller room, right? I remember when my son was very overwhelmed. He said, I cannot mop that kitchen floor. And I said, why? I didn't understand, because everyone else his age had done it. And he said, it's too big. And he was just crying. And I said, well, do you think you could mop just this little square in the corner? And he's like, yeah, I could do that. So I had him mop that. And the next day we mopped two of those squares. And the next day, maybe like all week too, you know, maybe after week four. But by gradually increasing it, he could thrive. But if you don't take the pains to invest in this, and it is painful, but there's no way out of the pain. You choose your pain. Either invest now and see them funnel their gift into serving mankind in the way that God intended for them, or they kind of become video game addicts. That's very common with ADHD kids, right? And who knows? We don't know who we have in our homes. We don't know what they're going to do in this world. And so we need to equip them with great education. Okay. All right. Okay. So when they get established in some chores, then it's time to add some studies. And with the studies, you want to start small as well. But by now they have some habits, right? Before a kid can take correction in handwriting, they need to be able to take correction at all. If they have too much ego to be told that they didn't sweep around the rug and under the rug well, then they need to get over that with chores before you're giving them studies. Because otherwise they're going to have that power struggle with you over reading, writing, and math and all these things that could turn out beautiful. And I'd rather that they work through the medium of chores, which are just kind of dull and plain, and not ruin their education over it. So that's why you want to do that first. The studies are sacred, right? They're full of the greatest truths of all time. We don't want to adulterate them by having power struggles all the time around the studies. Okay, so after that, it's time to add some studies. Add one at a time and keep them small. Let me give you, how many minutes do I have? Seven. Okay, let me give you an example of how you do this, like small baby steps when it comes to education. Rather than assign a child, you know, write a big essay, or say this is a preteen or something, write a big narration or an essay, or write me what you learned from your book, whatever you're assigning. Instead of assigning that to someone who writes really sloppy, and then having all these corrections you feel like making, but you don't want to burst their bubble and actually make that many corrections, because that's going to kill them, you know, it's going to just crush them, I mean. Rather than that, why don't you just have them write two words, and write them beautifully, and establish a habit of beautiful handwriting, and a habit of paying attention to how they write. Tomorrow they can write four words. The next day they can write eight. By the end of the week they can have, you know, they can write 16 words. But it's not about the words. What's happening is they're forming a habit that will serve them the rest of their life, where they can write beautifully without effort. And okay, so let's say you help them do that and they get the mechanics of writing established. Pretty soon, two lines grows into four lines, grows into eight lines. Pretty soon they, and this is copy work I'm talking about, not writing from their own brain. Copying the English language in its perfected form, okay? They are seeing it perfected, they're copying it, and they're doing this in larger and larger amounts. This is very Charlotte Mason. Pretty soon, they're writing a whole page every day, and it's easy, because they worked up to it gradually, right? It's like my son mopping the floor. And then, hold them at that for a month. But you don't normally see any 11-year-olds write a whole page of beautiful handwriting, do you? It's not very common. This, as you establish it piece by piece, little by little, this becomes their norm, and it's beautiful to see. Then, and what it does for their character, to hold themselves to high standard and not be satisfied with sloppiness, it's life-changing for them. So after they have written a page every day for a month of copy work, then you can move them on to what Charlotte Mason calls written narration. And this is just one degree more advanced than what they were doing. Do you see how when they advanced their handwriting to a whole page, they got the mechanics of handwriting out of the way? The awkwardness of the pen, the ability to make it beautiful and go quickly, all that is mastered. So now they only add one more thing, which is tell back what you read. This is only 1 degree advance from what they were doing. Let them do that for several years. Tell back what you read. They're not even being asked to tell their own thoughts yet. They're not being asked to invest their own genius into the work. That comes later. They need to humbly learn from the greats for years. Don't copy the greats. Tell back what you read about. Okay? It's telling it back with a little tiny bit of their own self-invested in it because it's the part they remembered, but they're not given so much freedom as like go create, compose this essay. Okay? And then say they're 14 or 15, 16, then they start essay writing. And that's just one step advanced. They already write beautifully. It's already easy. They've been doing it for years. They've now seen grammar and punctuation in its perfected form by years of copy work. They've now become exposed to the greatest ideas of all time because they're reading classics and they're telling you all about it every day in written form. So they're all primed for what now becomes beautiful essay writing. When we see kids move through this standard, it's not just for ADHD. This is what we do with all students. But it's so important for the ADHD kids because the order, the commitment establishes habits that they're going to rely on so that studies aren't so hard over time. Okay, but as we see kids doing this, their essays are definitely collegiate level and they're beautiful. And now they're able to get coached in really more deep aspects of their writing because they write beautifully, they have their grammar and punctuation mastered. You're saying things to them like, how can you back up this argument better? I know how you feel about this because you told me in the discussion, but if I were your opponent, I'm not seeing that in your essay. How can you tell me that stance and back it up with evidence? See, that's really interesting for 14, 15, 16-year-olds. They don't want to be like scrambling over bad handwriting and punctuation by then. And if you have older kids and did not start this way when they were tiny, all of this goes way faster with older kids. You can take a month of chores. You can take a month of handwriting. They'll zoom right up, and in a few months, they can be doing all these things. They don't have to take years once they're older. Okay, let's see. I want to say one more thing. It's so important to teach them, while you're doing this, about the difference between distraction and self-care. If they feel the fidgets and the wiggles, which they often do, they need to get those wiggles out. So you teach them, don't just get distracted and trail off in your reading and writing and start like doing somersaults all over the room. Just come to me and say, is it almost time for my break? I need to go outside, right? And you can set them up for a successful schedule. As you increase and develop that schedule, maybe they do their morning chores, and then maybe you have like a morning routine like scriptures and breakfast and cleanup, and maybe they're off to their Latin lesson or their piano or whatever you have lined up for them. In between those, why don't they go take 10 minutes and do whatever they want outside? And you can just put those 10-minute blocks in between every half an hour if you want.
I can get them to come back.
Habit formation. Okay, I know, that's such a good question. I didn't realize that this would go so quickly. If anyone is interested, let me just give my phone number because you can text me and I have all kinds of videos on all this stuff if you want any training. But it's 208-312-3445. My website is realeducation.net. And our email is info@realeducation.net. And we go into more depth than I can here on all this, but I just kind of want to show you what's out there. Just in closing, I want to say that the hardest part of all, where the rubber meets the road, is with you. You have to follow up and follow through. If you will meet with them at night, talk about what went right, what went wrong, refocus, reestablish, a lot of kids will get back on track just with that. If they're super resistant, if they're defensive, if the relationship is kind of smashed and you've been doing all the positive journaling you can, but they're not fully on board, things aren't fully mended, that's not enough. If they're resisting, they do need consequences. And you need to be careful with them because kids with ADHD don't learn from consequences in the same way that kids without ADHD do. And so it is important to be careful. It's important to be extra firm, more firm, but to be very loving. And they actually learn better from extrinsic motivation than the intrinsic because they're not intrinsically motivated for anything unless it is their hyperfocus or unless it is very overstimulating, like video games and drugs. Isn't that hopeful, right? Or unless it is something that is scaring them with a deadline, then their dopamine starts firing, you know? And or if it is something with a terrible consequence. Those are like the four things that motivate them. Did I mention their hyperfocus? Yeah, that's the main thing. So, okay, so in closing, I just want to say, knowing that they have this genius and that so much hinges on us, I plead with you to make it of utmost importance in your life to clear out your schedule, give all your prayers to heaven on the subject, educate yourself in everything you can find, get coaching if you need. There are ADHD coaches out there. I'm not one of them, but I do have a lot of experience with ADHD in education. So if you want to contact me for coaching or for videos or come take our main course, whatever you want, I just think that it really is our action in this moment with them that is going to decide if they get to go be equipped with the opportunity like these greats I told you about, or if they get to be video game boy. And that's all I have.